From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world, I'm George Norrie, and welcome to America's most listened to late night talk show, Coast to Coast AM, back from vacation. Next one won't be until July, so this will be a long run here. Well, I hope you had a very Merry Christmas. Those of you of the Jewish faith, a happy Hanukkah to you as well. Open lines later this hour, and then a special tribute to a past Coast to Coast guest, Dr. Robert Gostwolf, who died just a few days ago at the age of 58 years old. And then we'll have open lines after that. Next hour, Michael Heiser, an in-depth look at the Da Vinci Code, fact or fiction. By the way, those of you listening to us on the number one rated WLS in Chicago, you got kind of a Christmas present from our program director there, Kipper McGee, who not only is a great program director, but he was also my program director in St. Louis when I was at our affiliate station, KTRS. But Kipper decided to give everybody in Chicago an early present last week. As you know, we are in Chicago, been there for a number of years, number one rated. But we were on for the last couple years, we were on for 3 hours. Well, Kipper has picked up that fourth hour. You get the complete program now. So if you're listening and you think, hey, this must be a mistake, no, not at all. Coast to Coast on for the full program now. So you'll be able to get the phone calls, the special open lines, you name it, it's there. And thank you to Kipper McGee. What an unbelievable sad story in New Jersey. A police vehicle carrying two officers drove off a drawbridge, plunged into the Hackensack River, killing both men. They have found one of the officers. They haven't found the other yet. These officers were delivering flares to the bridge operator because the safety gate was not functioning, but the weather was horrible. It was foggy. It was rainy. They didn't know that the drawbridge had been lifted up to allow a boat to go through. Their car plunged into a canal 40 feet deep, and they died. Unbelievable story. In Australia, Australia's wealthiest man, media and gambling mogul Kerry Packer, has died. According to his family, he was 68 years old. Now, Packer ranked as the world's 94th wealthiest person by Forbes magazine. His fortune, $5 billion. You can't take it with you. I don't know Mr. Packer. I don't know what kind of person he was. I don't know if he was benevolent or not, but I sure hope that he was. Violence claimed the lives of at least 21 people in Iraq, including a U.S. soldier, a university lecturer, and a member of the provincial council. More than 50 people wounded, including a governor there. The U.S. soldier died when a rocket-propelled grenade hit his patrol vehicle in Baghdad, bringing now the number of American troops killed in the Iraq War to 2,167. Our condolences to all those family members who have lost American troops in that war. And quite frankly, our condolences to the 30-some Iraqis who have died there. The innocent ones who have died there because of the conflict. Prime Minister Ariel Sharon of Israel will undergo a catheterization procedure within 3 weeks to repair a small hole in his heart that apparently led to a minor stroke. The head of a cardiology hospital said the hole, which is less than an eighth of an inch wide, is a minor birth defect found in 15 to 25% of the population. Apparently he's had it since he was born. And they say it is a routine procedure. Story that broke over the weekend. The late Soviet dictator, Joseph Stalin, ordered the creation of Planet of the Apes-style warriors. He wanted to cross humans with apes, according to recently uncovered secret documents. He hired his own medical team. He gave them money, and they went to work. Obviously, they were unsuccessful, but Stalin wanted to create this half-man, half ape, so that they could just do all kinds of things on the battlefield. Here in St. Louis, where I'll only be here for 2 more weeks before I go back to Los Angeles for a very lengthy stay, the city of St. Louis, we're divided into two sections. There's the city of St. Louis, and then there's St. Louis County. The city of St. Louis has decided to go with the Diebold election systems for their upcoming elections. They said they were very impressed by the firm's operations and equipment. And as you know, we've been doing stories about this over the last couple of years. But the city of St. Louis says they want to go with Diebold. Meanwhile, the county, St. Louis County, has decided to pick from the election systems and software company. They like their system. And they said, quite frankly, the controversy surrounding one of the contenders, Diebold, was a factor in their decision. Indian News Today reports that Apache leaders want Geronimo to be buried in the Triplet Mountains on San Carlos Reservation. The American Indians are petitioning Congress to investigate the elite Yale University Skull and Bone Society. The petition is part of an ongoing effort to obtain the remains of Apache warrior Geronimo. The online petition describes the desecration of Geronimo's grave in 1918 by what they say were members of the secret society. An attorney for Skull and Bones denied that the society has had Geronimo's skull on display in a windowless building called the Tomb in Connecticut. That's quite a story. In Missouri, a lover's dispute over a cell phone ended suddenly when the woman, get this, she didn't want to give the phone back to her boyfriend while he was trying to grab it. She said, nope, you're not getting it. She swallowed the phone. They rushed her to the hospital. She's okay now, but the thing was lodged in her throat. By the way, astronomers peeking at the moon saw a small meteorite hit it in the Sea of Showers. The impacts are not uncommon. The rock estimated to be about 4 to 5 inches in diameter, and they were able to see the flash, which they said was as bright as a seventh magnitude star. Scientists also, by the way, have found mass dodo graves. Yep, I kid you not. On an island in the South Indian Ocean, they dug up the 20-some remains. Little is known about the dodo, a famous flightless bird thought to have become extinct in the 17th century. Researchers believe the bones were at least 2,000 years old. Well, over the weekend, huge parts of New Orleans remained empty on Christmas Day. Streets that flooded with water after Hurricane Katrina crushed the city August 29th were still stretches of smashed houses and debris all over the place. Now, you might remember a couple months ago, I had as a guest Barry Fisher. Barry is a recycler, and he has come up with some innovative technology that he wanted to produce building materials and rebuild New Orleans. So many of you have been emailing me saying, whatever happened to Barry? Whatever happened to the project? In a moment, we'll chat with Barry Fisher on Coast to Coast AM. Well, Barry Fisher has developed proprietary technology that produces building materials and other products from any, listen to this, from any and all waste materials. He believes his technology is the start of a possible paradigm shift in the management of municipal solid waste by creating highly profitable and beneficial products from the kind of materials that are now maxing out landfills around the world. Mr. Fisher has traveled extensively, meeting with all kinds of top-level people around the world to discuss environmental issues. He was on our program on September 20th. A great, innovative idea. Barry Fisher, you got me so excited about you rebuilding New Orleans. Whatever happened?
Well, good evening, and good evening to your audience. I just wanted to say Merry Christmas to everybody. I went down to New Orleans, and I got a chance to tour all of the areas. I stayed on the barge on Mississippi River for the 4 days I was there. I went through and I looked at all the contamination issues. I looked at all of the damage and debris that was everywhere. I went out and I surveyed the landfills. I took a look at what they were doing with the debris, where they were putting it. And when I got in front of the mayor and the council to rebuild New Orleans, they pretty much indicated that they weren't interested.
Oh, you got to be kidding, Barry.
No, they weren't interested in even discussing the possibility of taking that material and rebuilding houses for half the cost.
I have interviewed a lot of people, specifically in the areas of recycling and environmental change. Never once have I received the kind of response, Barry, that I got when you were on the program. In just that 1 hour you were on the show, I can't believe they decided to pass on this.
Well, I don't think they want a solution to their problems. They don't want to know how to rebuild their houses. They're not even discussing environmental cleanup or contamination. And over the last 3 months that they've been working on the issue down there of cleaning up, they've managed to clean up about 15% of the debris.
Oh, Barry. So what
and
happens? What do you do? Because you had your
everything to the landfill and burying it.
You had your equipment there. You were ready to go, weren't you?
Yeah, I've still got people there. They've been there on a parking lot now for 3 months. We've got 100-yard walking bed trailers. We've got excavators. We've got wheel loaders. We've got people sitting and waiting.
Did you get any kind of response from the local media down there? Because I would guess they'd be pretty excited about this.
I went on NBC down there on their local news channel at noon. They brought me back on at 5, 6, and 10. So, I did get to speak directly to the people of New Orleans. I was on two radio stations while I was down there. I got to speak with a lot of New Orleans residents. Everywhere I went, I had an opportunity to speak with grassroots community groups and to try and get in front of this issue. I think the problem is this. They're so used to just asking for money that they really don't know how to address the problems that they have down there.
Well, Barry, why didn't they just, give you a small project? Why didn't they let you test it? Why didn't they say, okay, here's a couple blocks, take care of all this debris, this mess, and turn it into some building materials?
Well, what they told me is that because of the lead, the mercury, and asbestos contamination that might be in the material, they won't allow me to grind it up. That's an EPA regulation.
But if I remember, you had a way around that, didn't you?
Yes, I have an environmental containment chamber that's used in lead processing. It's a very large chamber that the grinding unit goes into, so there is no airborne material whatsoever.
So what are you going to do next, Barry?
Well, what I need to do is I need to come up with the dollars to build this and to go down there and do the work without them. This needs to be done. The environmental contamination issues need to be addressed. They're not addressing them, and my biggest concern is not whether they're going to have a Mardi Gras this coming year or not, but my overwhelming concern is the safety and the health issues that anybody going to Orleans to celebrate Mardi Gras might put themselves in harm's way.
I talked to several people over the holidays. They are living in St. Louis. They came up from New Orleans.
Okay.
Most of them are working at restaurants and other positions like that where they got displaced, obviously. You know what? I had mentioned your idea to them, and these are people who are not in recycling, Barry, and they're not builders. They're just people who are restaurateurs in New Orleans. They love your idea. They wanted to see this thing happen.
The builders that I've talked to all across America love this idea, too, and they want to get their hands on the material. They want to use my material to rebuild. We're being prevented by the lack of a contract.
Tell us a little bit more about the technology, the machinery. There are a lot of people out there. They're very curious about this. How's it work?
Okay, well, this machinery, a lot of it was created over the last 100 years. These are not anonymous machines. We're talking about grinding units. We're talking about impact mills. We're talking about thermal dryers. ABB Raymond and Bartlett Snow and a number of companies manufacture these and have been for over 100 years. So we're talking about technologies that have been used in a dozen different industries. And they're proven technologies. Magnetic separation, ferrous and non-ferrous metals, it's a proven technology. Impact mills made by Alice Chalmers and made by large companies. They've been working in minerals for years. The grinding units have been used successfully all across our country for the last 38 years. So we're not talking about some new, unproven technology. We're talking about processing material that has the ability to become another panel or another board or another door panel.
All right, so why don't you break down, sell this whole technology to some major conglomerate, and they'll go to work and take your idea?
Well, I mean, I'm sure that they'd be glad to do that. Nobody has offered, but if they did, I would certainly entertain an offer.
I would pitch, for example, doesn't Halliburton have some no-bid contracts down there?
Yeah, they got about a $51 billion no-bid contract with nobody looking over their shoulder.
Hey, weren't they going to look at this project of yours? I thought they were going to try to help you.
Shaw Group was going to look at it, but they never did. FEMA, I presented this to FEMA in February of 2005, way before the hurricanes ever hit. And, their response was, well, we don't want to build machinery and have it sitting around just waiting for something like this to happen. And I said, well, hurricanes and natural disasters are going to continue to occur in this country every year. Somewhere in this country, we're going to have a hurricane, a tornado, an event of some type that needs to be responded to. Why wouldn't you want to have the equipment and machinery available at your disposal so you could meet that demand?
Oh, I agree with that. You know, I saw a truckload of lumber, and I thought about you, Barry. I said, you know what? Even though that precious lumber that came from some forest somewhere is being used and maybe a house, maybe a building, you can use material that otherwise will be dumped in a landfill, and you can create almost the same kind of material, maybe even sounder.
Well, it's an engineered product that will meet or exceed the standards for those materials.
Is it fireproof in some cases?
It can be made fireproof or waterproof, mold and mildew proof, insect proof. We have all the technologies to do that.
Barry, you sound disappointed.
Well, I'm disappointed that they're not looking beyond the dollars that they're trying to get in. I mean, they're more concerned about rebuilding levees than they are about the environmental contaminants. So according to EPA regulations, you cannot put anything with human feces on the ground and grow crops. And yet, you know, the rice crop, the sugar crop that's going to be grown in Louisiana, the material that went into that that water that surged across the state had over 1.5 billion gallons of fecal coliform bacteria in it. That's human waste. Needs to be cleaned up.
Look, we're on a monster station down in New Orleans. They did one heck of a job during the hurricane, WWL.
Oh, they did, absolutely.
Barry, why don't you call some of those people there? They love that town. They've been there for more years than I am. You know, I'm sure they might be able to steer you or at least help give you a platform where all I would like to see is for you to test this machinery, start coming up with some building materials, and having people say, you know what, this is a great idea. We don't have to worry about it.
I brought dozens of samples of our material down, and I showed them to the people, and it didn't make any difference. I brought a video of our process operational, and it didn't make any difference.
You call them, and I can assure you they'll listen to you. Now, whether they can get the right people to jump on board to do this, I don't know, but you might as well do that. You are going to go back to New Orleans, or you're done?
Well, I've got people that are out for vacation right now, and they're going to be starting back in about a week. My partner down there is going to be back on the ground the second week of January. I'm going to probably be down there the third week of January. At least I'm planning that, but I have a visit to Texas to do before I go there.
What's the city look like now, Barry?
It looks like a destroyed city. Every street that you drive down has debris piled up on both sides of the street. They've taken all the refrigerators and stoves and pulled them out of the houses. They're taking walls and panels apart. They're gutting the interiors of houses and piling that on the streets. I mean, it's a mess.
In your opinion, assuming New Orleans gets rebuilt, and I trust it will, how long do you think it'll take?
15 years.
Just to get it back to what it was?
Yeah, just to get it back to what it was, because the Army Corps of Engineers and the federal government's going to have to recertify the elevations for them to build. And what we're being told is that it's going to be 7 to 9 feet above sea level. And as you know, the majority of New Orleans is below sea level or at sea level.
True.
They're going to need 390 trillion tons of fill material to rebuild that city to the proper elevation.
Okay, you're going to be able to use this machinery anyplace else?
Oh, I can use it everywhere. I can use it at every landfill across the country, so I'm not disheartened by not being allowed to come into New Orleans. I'll go to Biloxi. I'll go to Birmingham, Alabama. I'll go to Mobile. I'll go to Florida. They all need this process.
We make a lot of predictions on this program, Barry, and mark my word, one day I predict someone's going to wish that they use this technology. I don't know when, but I think they are going to do that.
Well, I would really hope that they would take a good look at what we have to offer. We've got engineers and scientists and chemists and physicists that can attest to the value of this material. They can also attest to the value of our chemical processes to kill all pathogens.
What's your website?
Our website is nomorelandfills.com.
All right, very good. Barry, good luck. Let's keep in touch. I don't want this to die away, okay?
Okay, very good. Can I give a phone number out if anybody wants to call?
Absolutely. Go for it.
Okay. I have a person down in Texas that's handling the phone calls for me there on this program, and that's 940-781-7777.
You better give it one more time.
940-781-7777.
Okay, Barry, you have a good new year, my friend.
Thank you very much, George. Have a wonderful time when I'm on your show. Appreciate it.
Well, let me tell you, you provide a great service, and I hope something happens. In a moment, our tribute to the passing of Dr. Robert Ghost Wolf, a Coast to Coast guest. We've lost another one. And then later on this hour, we'll have open lines. And then right around the corner at the top of the hour, Michael Heiser, we're going to talk about the Da Vinci Code, Fact or Fiction. I'm George Norrie, back fresh on Coast to Coast AM. Yes, indeed. We'll have open lines in just a moment, so bear with me. But there's some things here that I want to pass on to you, and then have a very special tribute to Robert Ghost Wolf. When I mention the name, Vincent Schiavelli, he has died, 57 years old. He died of lung cancer. Many of you, including me, probably will say, who is Vincent Schiavelli? Now, you probably don't know him by name, but you would if you saw him. He was the droopy-eyed character actor. He appeared in a number of movies. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. He was in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. He played the science teacher, Mr. Vargas. And I remember him especially as one of the ghosts in the movie Ghost. Remember, he was the one, he was the hyper, very upset ghost in the subway system. And he's dead, died in his home in Sicily, 57 years old, of lung cancer. Vincent Schiavelli. Interesting email that I got from Dale in Orlando. He said, George, a hero's handprint never fades. Listen to the story. Chicago firefighter Francis X. Levy was washing windows in a firehouse on Good Friday, April 18th, 1924. When an alarm interrupted his work. A building was ablaze at 14th and Blue Island. Levy ran off to fight the fire. He never returned. He was killed when the building collapsed on him. The next morning, another firefighter took up Levy's cleaning chores at the firehouse, which was on West 13th Street. He discovered the dead man's handprint smudged on the unfinished window. From that day on, the firefighters claimed that nothing could remove the print. The window, by the way, was broken in 1946 when a newspaper boy threw a paper through it. About a week or so ago, I got an email from someone who said, George, it's been about 2 years since you had Dr. Robert Ghost Wolf on as a guest. Let's get him back. And I sat and said, you know what? He's right. Robert Ghost Wolf had not been on since June 5th of 2003. He was a good guest. He worked intimately for many years with elders, Hopi elders, Native Americans in North and South America. He was an expert on spiritual teaching. And then I just found out a few days ago that he died at the age of 58 years old. I don't know how Dr. Robert Ghost Wolf died. His website does not say robertghostwolf.com. Remarkable man. Here's a brief snippet from that interview, June 5th, 2003. Robert, how'd you get interested in archaeology? Was this something that got you when you were young?
It got me when I was very young. But in my travels and journeys of finding out who I am, you know, being a mixed blood person, there's a lot of our history that is not told, that we don't know. It's a tragedy that's a reality in that in the development of our great society that we have today. There were many people who changed their names that because of things that happened 200 years ago, you know, would not make any claims to their native heritage, things like this.
Sure.
And then all of a sudden you find these old pictures of grandma, and like you're looking at grandma and you're going, well, she sure looks like an Indian to me, you know. And in my journeys for who I was, I kept meeting incredible people and hearing all these incredible stories and finding all these incredible things. And one day I said, you know, maybe there's a way that you can actually make a living doing this, you know, and tell about this stuff. Because, like, you know, once you really get into it, George, it's just so—it's so captivating. I mean, because it's real.
Has it been challenging for you?
Challenging isn't the word, but yes, it's been extremely challenging.
Well, where did these giants end up? I mean, surely they're not walking around on this planet.
Where they go comes to where they are. And where they are, I think, goes back to finishing closure on the question that you asked, which is, you know, where are you finding these things? I'm finding these things right now. I mean, the evidence, the archaeological evidence, the anthropological evidence. I'm finding them from northern Colorado through the Four Corners area down into Mexico, and then other paths lead me to Bolivia and Peru. And so where did these people go? This is where we're... Well, in the stories that they tell, they talk about these global superstorms.
All right.
That occurred.
Mm-hmm.
Fireballs from the sky. Fireballs that would come down and burn entire... I mean, amazing devastation.
Those could be meteorites.
Exactly. Or they might be some other thing that we don't know about yet. And when this comes back again, these changes will enact, and these things will happen again. And there is a precise, in my books, Days of Destiny, I wrote about the some of the calculations of this, and I correlated it to different things that happened in the world, in China, in Italy, where there are writings about things that happened that would substantiate and affirm the reality of this, and that, yes, there are actual cycles. These cycles are about to reoccur. Getting into the Native American myth of it, you know, myth is my story, history is his story. So mythology is my story, and my story talks about things that happened, and it talks about people who were very right-brained. They were not left-brained. They were right-brained. And so they understood visions, and they understood metaphysical things. One of the things that has always been a curiosity with me is how now we put so much emphasis on remote vision, you know, and you can go and get a course and buy these tapes. Mm-hmm, 6 weeks, you can learn remote vision. Well, grandfather sat there and worked on this 30,000-year-old thing in a sweat lodge, and he had remote visions all the time, you know, to be real.
Well, they had the ability to do it. I mean, they were not tainted
they believed
by
they
things.
Could, and so they did.
Yep, exactly.
Because thought creates the nature of reality.
That's what it comes down to.
And you know, as we're moving into a time right now that is so essential, and it's like, you know, we're so filled with fear. And fear comes from not understanding. And we're moving into a time of severe, radical change. Severe, radical change.
Haven't we always been in this quandary since almost the beginning of time? I mean, you look at history, Robert. Every civilization has had, in its own way, major change, catastrophes. Mount Vesuvius blows up.
Yeah, yes, it has. It has been a continuous story. In many of these artifacts, they show these great ships, these arcs, people moving, migrations, and they're showing them through times of dramatic climatic global earth changes. They're showing volcanoes in the background and things. So, yeah, this has always been going on. With civilizations, we go into a slightly different story, because the amazing thing about civilizations is that they reach peaks, right? They go really high. Everybody's enlightened. They deliver all this incredible information, and then they decline and disintegrate.
And they're wiped out.
And they're wiped out. And then somebody else picks up, some other unforeseen, aboriginal group somewhere, whether it be the Huns or whoever. They suddenly, now they rise, and they have this great situation. And those patterns have always been a fascination to me.
Are we in one of them now? A pattern?
Yes, we are in one of them now. For me to explain that, I would have to go to the most accurate interpretation of the understanding of that, which would be the Mayan interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
The Mayan are an incredible people who have not only kept their knowledge, but they have kept their heart. You know, so many of us become angry, and you know, and the conquerors came and they did this, and you know, there's the great white wine about they're taking everything away from us and they're charging us taxes, and then there's the great red wine about, you know, they killed the buffalo and they slaughtered us. I'm not being funny. I'm just.
I understand.
But the point of the story is that the Mayan kept their heart, and the Mayan kept that. But going to the Mayan thing right now, and they're so accurate, and the Mayan philosophy ties into my personal beliefs. My personal beliefs have to do with the fact that there is no doubt in the world. There is no doubt in everything that I've seen, from statues to writings, that the person known as the Nazarene, Jesus,
mm-hmm.
Yeshua, Sananda, whichever you choose to name him so you can identify, was here in the Americas. And they talk about this time as a time of the end throes of the serpent energy, not serpentine, serpent energy, the end throes, the violent upheavals of self-destruction.
When do you think his visit was? So was it after his situation in the Middle East?
According to the historical records, there was a man in Jerusalem that was crucified in 33 AD.
Mm-hmm.
According to the other records, if you go into the whole Masonic legend, if you go into the whole Magdalene thing, if you go into the fact that Jesus did, in fact, live beyond that, because after all, he conquered death. His final initiation was to conquer death and to resurrect. Why did he do that? To show people that we are forever. That we are forever, that we are everything that we were ever taught in these great teachings, that we are the I am, and not the I am as we think of it in this country, which tends to be I am more or less in an ego way, more or less as a noun. I am in terms of more of an indigenous sense meaning a verb. I am is an energy. I am is a declaration of I am. I am is a declaration of I am an energy that is. I relate to the trees and the earth and the sun and the stars and the moon and the eagles and the hawks and the elk. And I am. I am life.
And so we lose another one. Sadly, Dr. Robert Ghostwolf, dead at the age of 58. We've lost three Coast guests in the last couple of years. James Arthur, editor and writer of Magic Mushrooms, who was plagued by his own demons. Dr. Eugene Malov, who had been working on zero-point energy, free energy. And then, of course, Dr. John Mack, an expert into the alien abduction phenomena. All of them have passed on. We'll have open lines for you when we come back. Here are the numbers. West of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First-time caller line is 818-501-4721. And the wild card line is ready to go at 818-501-4109. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, and let's take a few calls here before Mike Heiser comes in at the top of the hour. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with us. Welcome to the show. Hi there.
How you doing? This is Dwayne.
Dwayne, where might you be?
Boise, Idaho.
Okay, welcome to the show. What's going on?
Thank you. I was kind of disheartened about Mr. Fisher's innovations and what they're doing. It seems like politics are involved in that. But I have this company here in Boise. It's called Diamond Z Manufacturing. Have
you? Mm-hmm.
And what they do is they build giant grinders. They grind up anything. Matter of fact, one of their videos, they have one of the best grinders dumped into their grinder, and it chops it up into little pieces.
We got to somehow get you teamed up with Mr. Fisher and get you guys to start doing something. I'll tell you what, we'll put you on hold, and we'll get you his phone number because I'm sure he'd like to talk with you. Let's go east of the Rockies. Welcome to the show. You're on the air. Hi there.
Good morning, George.
Morning.
How are you?
Good, sir. Thank you.
All right. I have a few psychic experiences to bring your way.
What happened to you?
I know you love to hear about those sort of things. I am 19 years old from the great 10,000 Lakes state of Minnesota, Minneapolis.
19? You're 19?
Yeah.
You've got the most mature voice for a 19-year-old I have ever heard.
Well, thank you very much.
You do. My, oh my. Okay, but go ahead.
I have, ever since the age of probably 13, 14, even younger possibly, I've had weird dreams, everything from high school classes to, you know, girlfriends, possible girlfriends and everything else, and everything has come true for that. Now.
Oh, really?
Yes, everything from, like, it may sound a little stupid, but missing assignments or whatever, to run-ins with future girlfriends and whatever. In fact, I had one a couple weeks ago with my present girlfriend now.
Do you think you got this ability from your mother? Because I'm convinced it's genetic and that we get it from the maternal side of our family.
I'm more predisposed to think that I believe I got it from my father's side of the family.
Oh, well, now that's interesting. So your father's pretty intuitive and has some of these special things happen to him?
Yes, he does. He has a few things that he quite won't own up to right now.
I bet. You know, I'm sometimes the same way when my daughters push me to find out, Dad, how did you get so intuitive? I don't talk about it. Thanks for the call. West of the Rockies, welcome to the program. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Oh, hi, George. This is Stuart. I'm on Maui.
Hi, Stuart. How are you?
Hi. Nice to hear your voice.
Thank you.
You know, I was a friend of Wolf and Dr. Robert Ghost Wolf, and Wolf and Shoshana came to visit me here 4 years ago and spent a week, and he told me a lot about Yachtstassel, about my place here. He called it Yachtstassel, which is like a tree of life that has nourishment for certain kinds of creatures, and they come here and they take away, you know, some nourishment in a spiritual way. Anyway, I've been talking to Shoshana and just talked to her 10 minutes ago to make sure she'd be listening to you now. And Wolf was visiting his daughter out in California last week, and he had called Shoshana while I was on the phone with her. She said, wait a minute, just call me back. So I did. And anyway, he said, you know, she said, I just talked to Wolf, and he has a lap full of babies, a lap full of grandchildren, all sleeping. It sounded so sweet. And so I guess he tucked them into bed, and his health wasn't good. I was a little concerned about it. He's having problems with blood pressure. Anyway, about 4 o'clock in the morning, his daughter went in and to give him some aspirin. He was sitting on the edge of the bed. Now, you remember a few years ago, he was on with Danley and Brinkley and Art, maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
That was back in 1998.
98? Oh, wow, yeah. Time flies. Anyway, of course, we all know Danley's story. Well, Wolf was sitting on the edge of the bed and took the aspirin, and his daughter went back to bed. And about 3 minutes after she tucked herself back in bed in her room, a lightning strike went off right above the house. The thunder was simultaneously flashing. The whole house lit up with light, and there were little filaments of light all over the house. And she thought, my goodness, but didn't think anything of it. She went back into the next morning to say hello to Wolf, and his body was still just sitting there on the edge of the bed, but he was gone.
Oh. Heart attack?
Who knows? She doesn't know for sure if that's the exact moment when he left, but you kind of have to wonder, being who he was, don't you?
You do. Stuart, thanks for the call. Appreciate that. I'll be back in a moment with our guest, Michael Heiser. We'll talk about the Da Vinci Code, fact or fiction. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM.